Hello and a warm welcome to the 52nd episode of the Open Science Radio. This one is again in English, and we thought after we have participated in the Science 2.0 Barcamp and conference, we would actually like to have something like a wrap-up episode to look back or to have a look at both events from a retrospective point. And with me is again Guido.
Hello, yeah, from Kiel.
And Konrad.
Hello there.
Right. Most of our listeners will actually have noticed that we have so far published, I guess, 10 episodes from the Barcamp, mainly. This one is, as I said, a bit of a looking back episode, and which person would be better to ask than actually Guido, as being one of the organizers. So maybe we should start with the Barcamp?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
So what's your impression, Guido?
Yes, first of all, let me thank you and Open Science Radio for doing a very good job during the Barcamp and during the conference. So I think your podcast episode have been so far downloaded very often. So it was really a good idea to bring the Open Science Radio on board. So let's start with the Barcamp. So from my point of view, it was again super. It was comparable to last year. That was quite interesting. So we expected some more participants. So last year we had about 50 participants. This year we were about 30. But I think on a Barcamp, it does not matter how many. So it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality of the participants. And this was this year again very good. And interestingly, well, it's very interesting, like last year, we had half of the participants never attended in Barcamp, and the other half were Barcamps experienced, as I would say. And half of them have a certain background in open science, and the other half so are more than beginners. So a really good mixture with the objective of the Barcamp to think about putting Science 2.0 and open science into practice. And so in that format, I think this Barcamp format is really, really good to have an intensive and condensed so exchange on different topic about open science. And also this year, with, I would say, only 30 participants. We also had 15 very good sessions with very interesting different topics from, and especially also some very practical topics in which some participants presented some tools, some platforms, so that you can really see what is currently existing that you can use to somehow practice open science. But also interesting topic about discussing what does Sci-Hub means for the community. And and I really liked, for example, the so-called ignition talk from Felix, because he had shown that in the example of the psychology community, that they based on and somehow reproducibility crisis, that something has to be changed. And this was the starting point of a so-called bottom-up approach. Bottom-up approach to apply more open science in the psychology community. And so really interesting how much open science is currently applied in that community and what they did. And also that it's in a movement that was started by the community itself. And that was really interesting. And in many sessions, this ignition talk by Felix was referenced. And yes, the slides are available. Mm. Also a podcast. He was interviewed afterwards. And so The point is after the barcamp, it's before the barcamp. So we plan to do that next year again. And no, what are your impressions?
Well, I think it was really, really good to actually have Felix as the person giving the Ignition talk, because he is truly about open science. He's not only a practitioner, but he's a practitioner to a very far extent. He's really investing a lot of time to also look into proposing to be more open to his colleagues, to other people at his university, the Ludwig Maximilian University in Munich. And I think what he has also said during his talk is that he might even have sacrificed a bit of his career due to choosing that open way. Because it takes him a lot of time to actually invest, to be open and to work along these lines of open principles. And that's something that I definitely admire, because giving up a bit of opportunity to follow your kind of principles and your own attitude is something that I actually worship. So that was really good. And he was really into the topic. And he was also kind of addressing all the audiences to get out of our own kind of bubble and our own small filter bubble, where we actually only preach to mostly the converted, and to go somewhere where open science is not yet established, and go there and try to introduce open science to these people and try to convince them to open up and work along these lines. So that's really, really nice. And that was a great choice. And he did quite a good job.
Yes, I fully agree, especially a point that he really somehow sacrificed some part of his career. And I think what also was what is worth to be mentioned is that he also said that sometimes are really quite simple but powerful steps to improve open science. For example, the example that they give open science badges for some sort of publication. So that is a small visible way how you can see how open research is, and with small badges, and it obviously works. And so that, I think, it's an important point. What he mentioned is to bring open science into practice is to start with small but powerful steps, because it's an ongoing approach, and the easier and the smaller the steps are, you can practice this open science, these open science approaches, the better it is. And yes, and generally also what I feel between during the discussions on the barcamp, that generally open science is seen as a good approach, and the audience also agreed, largely they all agreed generally that open science should be regarded as natural. It's natural that science is open. So, and only when you have only, in some cases, with a good argumentation, it should be closed. But there are still a lot of people that don't know how, or they have some fears, and many people still need some sort of proof that open science is really making science better. And and what I also see, what I saw at the barcamp, is that it's interesting that when you attend different workshops about open science, it's often that mostly the same topics are discussed. But this is also okay, because you have always new or always beginners and at those events, and also experienced people, and also they are always new beginners at each event, and so you have to repeat some things very often. But this is very important to have some sort of knowledge transfer to motivate these people to do this. So it's a really, really large and intensive and approach to really bring it into practice. So it took a long time and repeating many things for many times so that it can be brought into practice. And in that sense, as you said before, it's really important also that you go to that open science must be generally be a part of all major discipline-specific conferences. So that it's always be regarded, okay, yes, it's natural that we have an open science track in all conferences, for example.
But it showed me also, because we were constantly discussing about the same points in various sessions, it showed definitely to me that we are actually thinking about some crucial points that are common to basically everybody else. And you said it in the beginning, we had kind of a lot of, or a good mixture of people. We had scientists, we had open scientist practitioners, we had people coming from outside of science, from companies, and even within the scientists group, we had people from a lot of disciplines, not only subjects like biology and informatics or something like that. We also had people from the humanities. We had librarians. So actually, this was a very fruitful group for discussions. And since we all came back to always the same point, something like, what are incentives to use open science or to work along these open principles? What are the drawbacks or the fallbacks that we stumble into when we practice open science? Do I have to give up chances and opportunities within my career or not? All these kind of discussion points are really the ones where we need answers to. And this was kind of very pointy in showing that again.
Yes. And I think so everything is somehow documented. So there was a pad for all. There's a pad for all discussion groups. And there are also some blog posts and also the Open Science Radio podcast. So everybody who is interested to get more information, what happened, what were the contents, or what was the different discussions about, just check out these sources. I think you will link it in your podcast.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think that's important for the kind of the event itself, especially when it runs annually. So when people visit the BarCamp Science 0 next year, I think it is important to look back at the 2016 one and the 2015 one, look at the blog posts published, listen maybe to our episodes, and try to not always start your discussions at the same beginning point, but maybe look where what actually happened in between. Did we achieve something? And try to always bring forth new aspects of discussion in the next events. Because I think we have a chance to actually have this kind of format being really useful to document these small progresses that we actually make in between the year. So,
yeah, that is a very good point. Maybe next year I will start the bar camp with a look back to the other two bar camps, so that people see that already have been discussed the last year. So it's maybe an idea for next year.
Yeah, maybe there should be a kind of a blacklist, right, of topics that shouldn't be covered. This is kind of a little bit against the idea of a bar camp, but maybe, I mean, I think it's a good point to evolve and that bring the community further, right?
Yeah. For that topic, please refer to that blog post and that podcast. Okay.
Yeah, true. One thing that is actually really that was actually really nice was I attended a session that Andreas Leimbach was the moderator of. And this one was about teaching open science. And besides the session being really interesting and having a lot of participants coming from various disciplines, having different approaches to how they teach science to their students or to their fellow colleagues, out of this session did actually arise something like a project that we're now kind of having started, where we want to look at whether it is possible for us to develop a collection of teaching materials for various aspects and facets of open science. And we are participating with this project in the in this year's Mozilla Science Global Science Sprint, Mozilla Global Science Sprint. So it's actually, you can actually see that out of a barcamp does something arise, so to speak. So projects, barcamps are intended to spark ideas and to be the kind of foundation point of new projects. And this time it actually fit for me. And now we have something like a little project, and let's see where we go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fine. It's really there for connecting people to start new things, right? I mean, this is the most important thing, meeting the people you might know or not know from before, but know from, let's say, interactions on the internet or somewhere, and then bring them together and find a common aim and, well, get things started.
Yeah.
Yes. The networking character is also really important in the barcamps. It's really true. And yes, and also I really agree that teaching or education is a very important point for open science, so that it's really integrated in education at a really early beginner stage. And for example, also in the Leibniz Research Alliance Science 2.0, we have a group who is addressing the topic, Science 2.0 in education. So yeah, really, really important. And so I attended a session which was about incentives for open science, and we started with an interesting approach. We started with thinking about what is bad about open science. So we try to find arguments against open science, and then try to find to discuss that these arguments are generally wrong. So it was an interesting approach also to think about to find arguments or what other people are currently criticizing open science, and where are they right, or where we have to prove that they are not right. And this was also really an interesting session.
Mm-mm. Because it's nice to actually look at the other side of the coin and look at the one side that always points to the bottom and that nobody wants to actually look at, and thereby thinking about what the usual accusations are, what open science does not mean or does not bring forth. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a nice standpoint to do that, and maybe it's something like methodology that one should actually apply more often to reveal new ideas, or at least to change your own perspective.
Mm-hmm. I like the term accusations.
Yeah.
Accusations to not open science.
Yeah, maybe it's too hard, but it's somehow
true.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Okay. Okay.
Should we have a look at the conference?
Yes, of course. So I also really enjoyed this year the Science 2.0 conference. So it's from the format, it's completely different in contrast to the barcamp. So the barcamp, it's an unconference format. The conference is a mixture between presentations and also some poster session and prototype session. And yes, the major topic this year was the European Open Science Cloud. And so we had an introduction by Jean-Claude Bogelmann and Klaus Tochtermann, and also from from Ms. Berger from the BMBF. And so the general question at the beginning of the conference was, what is the European Open Science Cloud about? And so we learned, so the idea is that existing data, research data infrastructures are connected across different disciplines, and it provides, and the objective is that it provides an easy and seamless access to research data in all Europe. And this should be done until 2020 with a lot of billion euro funding. And yeah, they address different, they distinguish different types of data, so-called big data that may, for example, that come from maybe physics or from astronomy, or so-called long-tail data, for example, from economics or social sciences, and also so-called industrial data. So they also include as well scientific community as well industries. And I think what is quite interesting is the explanation from Burgelmann, what is European Open Science Cloud, the different parts of the term, of the European Open Science Cloud. So he said European is generally means, okay, it's called European, but it's not restricted to the European research area. So also other countries should be involved. Open means, open as possible, but closed when required. Science is means okay, yes, it's called science, but besides science, also industry should be somehow be involved. In the context of so-called open innovation and cloud means okay, you see the European Open Science Cloud is rather a federated approach to bring together its existing infrastructures. And so this includes many stakeholders, among them also, IMF from a library, and library also play an important role in that, really happy about. And we learned during the presentations that had been given during the conference that there is a lot of existing, there are a lot of other stakeholders, a lot of other infrastructures, a lot of experience that is already there to create this European Open Science Cloud. But I've learned that the creation of the European Open Science Cloud is really complex, and but the problems are not technical problems. The problems is who is allowed to store the data, who is allowed to access the data, under what conditions, how will this infrastructure be governed, and also what can be incentives for this infrastructure, but also what can be a business model. So it's a really complex infrastructure with a lot of challenges behind that. And so, and my what I also learned is that there's a really open question is will this European Open Science Cloud be a revolution or an evolution, and for especially in the sense of open science, because also there was a panel about that, and during that panel really saw that it's somehow easy to apply existing approaches to the European Open Science Cloud as a system, so the different approaches from the existing science system to the European Open Science Cloud. But it's more important to really apply new concepts to this really new idea of the European Open Science Cloud. For example, to really apply more open approaches, to really apply more community-based approaches, for example, when you have some review processes or whatever. And so I think I heard a sentence like open as possible, close when necessary, really often during different talks, but it's not clear where's when it's open, when it's closed, where's what are how do you decide that? And so that is why some people criticize this term European Open Science Cloud, because they fear some sort of open washing in the chance that central aspects of open science are not applied. And so I think the way how much open science approaches are really integrated in the open science cloud decides whether it's more an evolution. So, okay, we have research data infrastructure, we bring them together, now are they connected, and it is. Or real, it's a real new approach with applying really innovative open science aspects that will be then a revolution. And yeah. Mm. So, but you also have been there. So what is your opinion?
I mean, before that conference, the European Open Science Cloud was kind of maybe not a mystery, but still a big question mark for me and probably also for a lot of others. And what I do have understand that they are trying to interconnect the already existing projects and infrastructures, something like the grid, European grid infrastructure, something like the infrastructure that the Helmholtz Society has in place. And I would also say that there still are kind of technological or technical challenges, because they have to think about a common data exchange format, or at least data linking format, or something like that. So there might be some minor technical questions still open, but probably most of the stuff is policy issues, I'd say. And the biggest question still is, as you said, how open is the European Open Science Cloud actually? It still is mostly a question mark for me, to be honest. But I think because there are so many questions in details open, that it still is kind of shady, and will probably become more and more clear over time. At that point, I just want to point towards a short video introducing the European Open Science Cloud that actually your employer, Guido, the ZBW, created, and that is available on YouTube, I think, and listeners will find the link to the video in the show notes of this episode. I mean, the interesting fact at the conference itself was actually to see how many different large infrastructure providers for science are there actually, and what their kind of approach to this issue is.
Yes, absolutely. So, first of all, thanks for mentioning our video. Yes, we created explaining a simple video that explains the core concept of the European Open Science Cloud. And I think they are still, it's still a little bit cloudy. Yeah,
yeah, true.
To say that word, what it really is, because I think, the term cloud is confusing, because cloud is referring to other concepts like software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service. And this European Science Cloud has nothing to do with common cloud aspects. And on the other hand, what you mentioned before is that there are really a lot of existing stakeholders that have to be involved in that process. And that makes it really, really, really complicated to govern. And so I think this all policy issues are really complex. Yeah.
And we have to state a disclaimer as well. We only have attended the first day of the conference, so we missed, unfortunately, the second one. And unfortunately, we also missed, for example, the talk of Tiziana Ferrari, who is the technical director of the EGI, one of those already existing big scientific infrastructures. That would have been really interesting to see or listen to her standpoint.
Yeah, so all slides are online, linked in the conference program, and we also wrote a report, which will be published in the BIT online. It's especially for library community, but so we wrote it in a general way.
Okay. One really interesting talk. And now I think Konrad has to help me. Was by the director of this French institute, Marie Farge, exactly. Her talk was really interesting in terms of being quite frankly in formulating her ideas. And she introduced also, again, the concept of the Diamond Open Access model, and in relation to that, introduced a service offering towards scientists that she and a couple of her colleagues brought into being. And she also referred to a Diamond Open Access model, a journal that I think Tim Gowers started recently. And this talk was really, really interesting. So if people are interested, have a look at her slides specifically, and maybe skip the first 10, because she did a really thorough introduction of the whole how science publication works. Mm-hmm. But the last 20 slides of her presentation are really, really good.
Okay.
Konrad, are you still?
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, some background noise here, unfortunately.
Oh, that's fine. I think after the talk of Maria Farge, we both looked at each other and thought, like, well, this was one of the talks that we would have, or that we wish for more often to see at conferences, right? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I think it was amazing that somebody in this high level has such a clear overview about the problems that we're often discussing, and also agrees on the solutions regarding this. So this was, as said, the golden, or as you mentioned, right, this golden approach, the diamond approach. So basically having an infrastructure, a platform that can do all the functionalities that you need in order to discuss your science today. I mean, this was pretty, pretty awesome having this said by such a person. I really hope that she is having enough influence of spreading this in these higher levels, because we are discussing this since quite a while, but I guess it's hard to reach people. But in her level, I think it's easier to bring this to the right people. And actually, you really could hear a little bit of her anger and her rage about that system in her talks. And it was really refreshing, let's say, at that.
And it was also very interesting that many talks were about open access. So they already talk about, yes, different open access strategies. What is what are the still current issues about app access and current challenges? And yes, and open access about publications, in which we have, I think, made some big progress the last years. And now the new challenges to apply open access for the scientific data, for research data, and where. So we are rather not so where we don't have so much progress in contrast to open access or publications. So that was also really interesting that open access still is a really important, was a centric topic at the conference.
But I think that's also partly because open access is probably, out of all the facets of open science, open access is the most known one, the most visible one, and probably the one that maybe basically started the whole thing in a broad manner, and that's probably why everybody's referring to open access constantly, because we have already something established there, and we can always look into that facet and try to see whether this could be applied to other facets of science. And we have a lot of learnings already. We have successes. We have failures. It
is, I guess, something that people can adapt rather easily. I mean, well, people still need to publish in certain journals to be accepted in their community, but it's easier to do this without, you know, always the fear of being scooped if you put your results too early online. And if you wrap your end product, your publication, in a different, in a different piece, basically an open access journal, then you don't lose so much in comparison to being transparent, being open in the earlier stages of this. This is why it's, I guess, the front of open science and should lead the rest.
Yeah, and this is quite along the lines of what Felix said, these small, simple steps, and publishing under open access is something that can be actually achieved rather easily.
Right. And I think, have we discussed the salmon already, right? I mean, this is also one of the things that she brought up, which I also like very much. So we have a lot of stuff published already, which will never be proper open access in that sense, that it'll be golden access, a golden open access. Mm. But many repositories are there from the university and so on, and many publishers agree at least to put these things online into these repositories. And the salmon is a tool that is actually checking your portfolio of publications and tell you which one you can upload and which one you can't. And it's, I guess, an important part to tell people, to motivate them to even dig out the old things and make them accessible.
Yeah, that was great. I don't know whether this was published before or whether they made this public before. I think it was kind of still in the early stages of being now announced that this service exists.
Right. And I think the nice thing was additionally that it was actually a student's project, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
This was basically coded by some students interested in open science, and well, they said, why not creating a tool that is solving a certain problem? And it's amazing. It's really, really fancy, very snappy. I really like it.
Mm-hmm. Again, which is a very interesting point, because it is a student's, I would not say a student's project, but it's kind of coming or being pushed forward mainly by students. This is something that I recognize all over the place. A lot of students who actually look into open science become open science enthusiasts very easily, and then start projects out of kind of a very blank field, because they're not afraid at that stage to try out new ideas. That's something, for example, the open access button also did. They were really blank and bold in the beginning and said, well, we have to change something, so let's make something like a blame button, which turned out to be a help button in the end. And look at Open Science Button now, what they have achieved of features and services around it. And Dissemin is something similar, and you can see something like that, approaches like that, and projects like that all over the place, which is great.
Mm. Yeah, really good summary, I think. And I think, as I said before, it's important regarding open science that you have just to start. Don't hesitate. And sometimes the steps can be really simple and powerful. So we are looking forward to next year. So good luck. We got some funding for events. And so we will... Next year we'll have the same combination of Barcamp and Science Open All Conference, and it will be next year in Berlin, and probably the Barcamp on March the 20th, and the conference the 2 days after that, so the 21st and 22nd of March in 2017. Yeah, and okay, maybe we will have some calls for this conference next year. We will see. And based on the experience of the last three conferences and two bar camps, so I'm really looking forward to next year. And maybe also together with Open Science Radio.
That would be great. Yeah, I will definitely block the time in my calendar, and I can recommend anybody else to go there as well. It was really, especially the Barcamp was really, really great, and connecting to new people was, as always, a very nice experience. I really love this format.
Yeah, And I think also having a call for papers for the conference is probably also a good idea, because from my opinion or from my experience, it at least gives you a variety of very specific topics that are kind of focus on around one or two problems and try to answer this. And I think this this is also really refreshing if you have, besides policy approaches, a lot of these very specific ones in between in a conference track.
Yeah, it will be maybe some sort of call, some calls maybe call for paper, call for posters, for projects. So the idea is that we have to address more scientists in the scientific community or other practical output that comes from other communities. We have also to address the library community as well, because we are also a library that engages in that topic. And so save the date, and we will see what we expect, what we can expect next year. Mm-hmm.
On a very last note, I would just like to address our very own listeners, the listeners of the Open Science Radio, and probably mostly the ones that are long-term or long-time listeners of our podcast. In the last blog post I wrote about the Barcamp and the conference, and I specifically asked our listeners a couple of questions, and maybe you find the time to go there and try to answer a couple of them. We just want to know whether this kind of event podcasting or smaller podcast episodes centered around an event is something that you would like or that you dislike, or that we should do more often, or that we should differently, or whether we should have a different feed for that, or just an all-in-one. So if you have time, 5 minutes, let us know what you think, just so that we have a feeling of what you guys out there would like us to do or to do differently or similar. Otherwise, we probably would do that once or twice a year. We did that now twice, a bit of twice with the Barcamp. Yeah. We did it really extensively. And Konrad also visited the Wiki site event lately and did an episode there that was just the one published before this one. So Open Science Radio 51 with Konrad and two of the organizers of the Wikisite event. And if you would like to have something like this more often, let us know.
Exactly.
Fine.
Okay, good. So I guess we can finally wrap up. So thank you a lot for your time, Guido. This was really good putting this together and getting the overview and wrapping everything into a nice format here.
To all our listeners, thank you very much for listening. Have a great day, and Guido Konrad, thank you a lot.
Yep. Okay, bye.
Thank you too, and goodbye.